So I think this is the beginning of our live podcast event. So,
cue the music.
Cue.
Welcome everyone. Thank you very much once again for coming down. Unfortunately, it wasn't the result most of us in the room wanted. I know we've got a Brisbane Bullets fan here. Are there any other teams fans here? Any neutrals here? I think we're all Wildcats. So,
Perth Bandits.
Perth Bandits, of course. So it's certainly a first for us doing a podcast in a live environment. So thank you, and we're looking forward to it, albeit with a bit of trepidation, especially after the loss. We're knocking on the door of the finals now, and in the final round of season 2023 is just around the corner. And what a season it's been. The 36ers defeating an NBA team and then somehow missing the playoffs. It's almost an inevitability. We've got the controversies from the Wagstaff suspension. Had to mention that one, given we're in a Perth audience. To Dean Vickerman openly pining for Jack White in a press conference, which was a very weird situation. And we've had so many highlights this season, just some brilliant highlights. That Xavier Cook's dunk, he's had a few actually. Brady Manick, of course, had a big one on Friday as well. And the game winners, Sean Bruce. Boys, I've got to mention his one.
I'm not familiar with his work.
I know you love him. And it would be remiss of us not to send our love to the Froling family. Harry Froling, obviously, involved in that terrible King hit incident. First, the silent partner during the game. We'll throw to you first, Joe, for your thoughts about the game.
Well, I mean, thank you, first of all, and thanks to everyone there. I can't actually see the crowd, but I'm sure there's thousands of you standing and cheering, whatever. Interesting thing about the game, I mean, I texted Andrew at about the three-quarter time mark and said, I think the Wildcats are going to win this. They'll space in the ball. They'll hit shots. It was totally on their terms. I would have said the same thing up to about the last 4 minutes, and then they just got super, super tight. We were talking in the break. I called it a choke. I thought they would have got that tight and only scored 15 points in that fourth quarter. I can't imagine watching it on the big screen. The taste, the bitter taste of defeat, that's tough. But it was entertaining, if nothing else. What do you guys think?
Look, this room was pumping. There was a lot of noise, a lot of activity up until about that 5 minute mark, and then things went quiet. And the mood has changed. But so we need to remember, we're now here not just as Wildcats fans, we're here as NBL fans. So we need to lift our mood back up and say, yeah, the team choked, but you know, the league goes on.
Well, here's our first draw poll. Show of hands, who reckons the Wildcats choked out of interest? Or it was just a tough loss? Okay, maybe half the room reckon that it was a choke. Yeah. Nick, what do you reckon? You're the super fan.
I think they didn't give it to Bryce enough. Yeah. I think, you know, Corey Webster took a lot of drives to the hoop and got blocked. Well, I mean, getting blocked by Clint Steindl. I mean, what the hell? And I know that they were doubling Bryce and stuff, but he always seems to find a way, but he needs the ball in his hands to do that. So, yeah, I don't know if I'd call it a choke. Maybe a couple of timeouts would have been good, but, yeah, I don't know. We've still got two more games, so win those two, we're fine.
I think one of the things that the Wildcats just... they've given up addressing is their inability to play defense. And until they can defend, they're always at risk of losing games like this, because if your shot doesn't fall, you've got nothing else to fall back on. So I think it's been the story of their season. They can't stop other teams.
Yeah, but you know, if you can outscore them, then that's fine. But they're finding it hard to string wins together, and that's the problem. And that's the problem you'll find in the playoffs too.
I think we've also got to talk obviously about the schedule. I mean, it's tough when you have a turnaround of realistically, what, 36 hours from that game against Illawarra. You've got to travel to Hobart, which is not the easiest sort of place to get to. You could see it late in the game. The shots started coming up a little bit short. I mean, the three-pointers were 7 of 15 at one stage, dropped to 8 of 21 at the end. So those were starting to come up a little bit short. Kind of, yeah, a couple of defensive lapses where guys are maybe a step behind because they're a little bit fatigued. So it's definitely a factor. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, the defense across most of the game, there was that little patch, I guess, where it looked really good for, you know, maybe a quarter. But after that, not amazing.
Yeah, that's not really our strength this year, is it?
No.
It's not just going to get better overnight. So I think I like what John Riley's done in just leaning into the offense, because that is our strength. But yeah, sometimes it's just not going to work.
It was interesting to see the kind of how the game changed. So the momentum shifted a few times. When the Wildcats got out in transition in the second, I thought was a really good thing. And that's when things started to work in our favor. And then going into halftime, it was looking pretty good. And I was saying to Stewie, I turned to Stewie and I said, Tassie have just lost their poise.
And in the third quarter, they just kind of, they just didn't seem to know what they were doing. They let him shot clock run down and they just lost the plot. And then it flipped again, and the Wildcats were the team that lost their poise with probably the last 4 minutes. As you say, Bryce didn't get a lot of touches at the end. Michael Harris, good on him for taking it to the rack, but they should have looked for Bryce on that possession. Okay, it was, I think it was about 8 points at that stage. It was probably gone at that stage, but you still want it in Bryce's hands. So, yeah, unfortunately, the Wildcats lack poise, and it's unfortunately been a symptom of this team, I would say, the last couple of seasons.
Well, they're, yeah. I mean, they're also, like, they're attacking the wrong guy. So there were times when there was maybe switches at the top, and you're thinking, right, now's the time to kick it to a guard to take it at the big guy. But then it's like, okay, what do I do? Do I go at him? And all of a sudden, they're attacking a guy who's maybe a little bit bigger, a bit longer, able to kind of stay in front. And it led to a couple of those really awkward shots going to the basket that end up being basically turnovers, for argument's sake.
Where do we put this in context, Joe? Obviously, Tassie are a decent team. They made the grand final last season.
I think the context for me is two things. Is Ty Webster's absence, and then Cotton with that brace on the knee. That to me, as Nick Tan said, they've got two games left. They win those, it's no problem. So to me, it is Cotton healthy. And then obviously Webster out. Who's going to step up into that spot? I actually haven't had a chance to look at this box score yet. Did Norton take the floor? If he did, I didn't see him. So that to me is what's going on.
One of the things we're looking at a Wildcats team that might be potentially missing the finals for a second year in a row. We all know last year Scott Morrison was absolutely pilloried for ending the streak and didn't probably cope with it very well himself. But where does this put John Riley? You know, he has come in, he's not really flipped the script as such. The Wildcats are still in a predicament. What are we thinking about? Was Scott Morrison as bad as what everybody said he was? Or is John really just not that much better? Curious.
16-12 last year.
I think he was bad. I didn't like him. I'm not a fan of Scott Morrison, the politician or the coach. But we won't go there. This season, I think I like what John Ridley's done from that New Zealand game when they put up the billboard for Corey Webster. I like when he's stopped playing players that weren't producing and he's just playing the hell out of the rest of the team. And that's when we turn the season around. And for me, that's the difference between Riley and Morrison. Because Morrison, when things stopped working for him, we didn't turn things around. We went on that huge losing streak. I've got a question from the audience.
Where was Thomas the last few minutes? Did he fail out or something?
Thomas? I don't think he fouled out.
Few minutes to go.
No, I don't think he was fouled out. I think it was a decision.
He had three fouls, so...
I think by that stage we needed threes as well, so they probably figured Jesse was. But I mean, that soft middle, yeah.
Well, that's it, and you give up how much on the defensive end as well because he can't stay in front of guys. So yeah, it's a very valid question.
Mitchell was better, sure.
Was Scott Morrison, John Riley comparison is different in that Scott Morrison came as that NBA experienced person, and I think he comes with I'm getting something. John Riley comes as not a head coach ever before. And he's learning, and I think he has learned through the year. Like he's adapted. I think we are suffering because he's a first time head coach as well. And I think having short rotations at this time of the season, although it's worked, is not the best thing. We need Ollie Hayes Brown and Michael Harris in that rotation to get us into a final where we can last. Because we're not going to last. Even if we make finals, the defense to actually last a series. So
I would say
a different comparison between the two.
Are those bench guys going to give you more than a tired starter though?
Well, Major needs more time. We need another
big effort. But, I mean, I would even go back to what Joe was saying before about the loss of not having Ty Webster playing is, you know, that's a huge thing. That shortens your rotation that's already short. I mean, I was looking at the box scores from Friday and thinking, we're basically running seven guys at the moment because, you know, you're getting a handful of minutes from Wagstaff, you're getting a couple of minutes from a Zunich or a Harris or these sorts of guys at the end of a game. And that it's a good point. Like, not having Webster there, it just... It does. It shrinks it even more.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good point. You're right. A new coach, there's going to be growing pains. I think Adelaide are going through it. Obviously, CJ's first season, he didn't have his own team. He was able to recruit his own team this time. That didn't go super well for them either. And we might talk about Adelaide towards the end as well, when we talk it more holistically about all the teams. But I think that's a really valid point. And I think that's something that the growing pains that we have to deal with, whether we like it or not, with that new coach.
Just ScoMo, I just want to say, I did have a certain sympathy for him, both professionally and personally. I remember he had sort of health of a child issues and stuff, but you could see it when times got tough, he blew up. I mean, it was getting so bad week to week in the presses of just finding new people to blame and new people to attack. It was highly entertaining. The team, I didn't like the roster as well. Like I didn't, and then Vic Law got hurt. So he was never able to instill confidence in anyone other than Bryce Cotton, and it showed.
Who thinks really is an upgrade on ScoMo, out of interest? Yeah, okay, so only a couple of hands there.
Harris is more likeable.
If
Morrison was as likeable as really, it'd be a completely different story. If really was as unlikable as ScoMo, everyone would be calling for his head.
Morrison's as likeable as Burton.
Yeah.
That's a fair point. And we can go back and watch old highlights of really knocking down threes or throwing behind the head passes and behind the back passes and all those sort of great highlights as well. We have maybe more of an affinity with him.
John really came from the NBL. He's got NBL experience. He's played in the league. Whereas ScoMo is heavily NBA related. So I think that's a huge difference, that really is familiar with the league and how it operates and how the teams play. I think that's a big difference. And that's why I think he's a better coach in the NBL.
Chase Buford gave it the American twist, though, and that worked.
Yeah, but he's a twat.
No, I don't want anybody saying anything bad against Chet, okay? He's a good player. Chet. Jason, you had a comment you want to
say? Well, I was just going to say, I think Willie has a lot more conviction in his system than Scott Morrison did in his system, whatever it was, because we didn't really get to see it.
Yeah, cool.
Well, he's certainly committed to small ball, so I think that's a fair observation, definitely.
They could double down that even more. Those guys have got to run. If they're going to play three-guard lineups, they've got to run more.
Yep.
Guards have got to actually help on the rebounds because they've got nobody inside who can help. So guys like Bryce and the Websters have to really help on the boards on defense as well. But they could go even faster than what they're doing if they're committed to going small. So.
And there were opportunities multiple times tonight where you had like a 3-on-2 situation, ball in the middle of the court, and we're not getting a layup out of that, which, to your point, you run. You run until the ball is stopped. If you get a dunk, take it. Like.
You're right. You've got to commit to going all in on the transition stuff. And I think in order to maximise Travers, we've got to get out on run as much as we can. Do I see a hand up here somewhere?
Yeah,
just in fairness to Morrison, when he came over, we had all the COVID issues and whatnot, and they were away for a few months, and his wife with the newborn at home, and then he's come back. And
he was coaching through a tablet.
The situations of life were harsh.
They had a tablet with him talking. Like the players didn't even get to shake his hand for months. So you're right. That's a really valid point.
He came on a couple of days before the preseason and whatnot. So, in fairness, on a human perspective, he wasn't going to enjoy that period of time.
Yeah. And if he goes 6-3 in that homestand that we had at the end and we make the finals and maybe we don't win a championship but we sort of progress through the playoffs, it's a very different conversation that we're having.
Better season than this season, I think.
Yeah.
Just one last thing about Morrison. He took that team on the road for 8 weeks and they got 10 wins in a row.
Yep.
Like, can't say the bad coach if you can do that on the road.
Yeah, but then they fell apart at home, so.
Yeah. Injuries piled up a bit as well.
With Vic Law hurt, I think if Vic Law stays healthy, they win those games.
Well, and he missed like the last three games, is that right?
John Brown came in too.
Oh, the John. Well, how could we forget John Brown?
I think we've all tried to hit shift away on that. But
that was an interesting time. That was good.
So, Stewie, you've crunched some numbers. You've got some interesting stats. Any other interesting stats you wanted to bring?
I mean, obviously, like, all of us going into this, we know what the keys to that game were. Like, the rebounding side of things. I mean, there's a few sort of stats. The 11 losses we'd had prior to this, we were being out-rebounded by 8.5 a game. We kept it fairly close, which I think was why the game was as competitive as it was. I think at one stage it sort of blew out to maybe 5 or 6 difference. But we kept it down to a -2 in the end, so not too bad. Jack McVay always does well against us. I don't know what it is, but certainly the couple of games this season, he's averaging about 20 points a game. Came out really great start in the first quarter. Probably the other really big thing that I've noticed, and this is a, I don't even want to say it's not a correlation necessarily to victory, but Brady Manick, when he hits his first shot prior to this game, shoots 57% from the field. When he misses his first shot, it's down at 39%.
That's some advanced stats.
It's a big difference.
How do you know that stat? That's fantastic.
Because I went through 24 box scores last night. 25, wow. But
Friday was a bit different.
Four, well, yes, exactly. There have been outliers to that, but it was 4 of 11 tonight, missed his first shot. So it just, I don't know. Don't know what it is.
Confidence work.
Yeah.
That's amazing stat. You should message that to John, really.
I will.
Manick plays 2 minutes. If he hits, if he comes out.
Exactly. Get him a layup.
Get him a layup.
Back to a cut. That's right.
Simple stuff.
So we wanted to also talk about the rounds a little bit. Obviously, Pride Round has nearly come to a close. We've got one more game playing as we speak, and we'll keep an eye on the scores. We might even be able to chuck on the end of that, depending on when we get kicked out. So we might be able to watch the last quarter or something like that, depending on how time goes. Maybe even another second half. But we just wanted to talk about the great initiative that the Pride Round has been. It's clearly been a really important and big deal. It's made a big difference. Obviously, Isaac Humphries came out this year, this season, and the NBL's done some really great work with him. The Wildcats did some great stuff with Trevor Torrence as well, which they've been using in the broadcast and putting on social media. So just wanted to, I guess, initially focus on the good parts of Pride Round before maybe talking about the Cairns decision, which has caused a lot of consternation amongst the league. I don't know who wants to jump in first on this one.
I'll jump in. I mean, two things that are good of it. I mean, obviously the obvious goodwill of it. I'd like to think we're all pretty supportive of the round and the initiative. Secondly is, and I hate to be callous about this, but it's been good traffic. It's been good talk for the league, for the NBL to reach outside of basketball and reach into something social. It's been two thumbs from me.
Yeah, it's been a good thing. I mean, to me, I mean, we'll get on to the decisions about the uniforms, but the uniforms become such a big issue around it. And it's like, it's a tiny little logo. Like, I think that sort of, it's almost, that's not the point. Like, let's not worry about the logo. Let's worry about the message we're trying to say, is that, like, this, we can be an inclusive sport, an inclusive community, and people who are perhaps, you know, living with a challenge, if you want to call it that, about having the confidence to come out and be who they are. You know, if it can motivate them to say, no, it's okay, it's fine, you can do it, then I think that's a step in the right direction. All these things will take time, but I'm sure that Isaac Humphries is not the only gay person in the league. Statistics would tell me otherwise.
And it's not just the players as well. There's staff, there's a lot of people involved. And, you know, I'll tread lightly as a straight white male, but I am an ally, and I think it's a great initiative. And it was really moving to see Isaac Humphries say to his team when he came out to them that he attempted to commit suicide. It's a big deal to make people feel included, and it's a basic human right, and queer people are 5 times more likely to attempt suicide. So it's so important that we have these inclusive rounds, and I hope that they just carry it even further. And it is a shame what's happened with Cairns. I don't know how much we want to go into that. When the news hit a few days ago, I looked at the jerseys online because I wanted to see what all the hubbub was about. And I actually thought that the jerseys were wrong. I thought they'd uploaded the wrong image because the rainbow stuff was so small. So, I don't understand, like, if I respect people's religion and I respect people's right to choose and think what they think and have their beliefs. But if you have a problem with the round, shouldn't you skip it altogether? Like, it's weird to not wear the jersey, but then play, and then the entire team has to... they made the decision that the entire team wouldn't wear the jerseys. Yeah. And then what about the players that actually wanted to wear the jerseys in that team? So the whole thing was a real shame, and I think the league could have handled it better too, because I don't know when this was announced, but the most recent articles I could find were maybe a few days ago, the start of the week. Well, so
I heard that it was... the league spoke to the teams in the preseason blitz that this was happening, and then they had some awareness training and stuff like that. So the teams have known about it since September.
Right. Well, in that case, then it's not as bad if they had that knowledge and it wasn't kind of... because the NBL has done things on the fly.
I just want to say, I think I like it. I like the round, but I would have liked to see better jersey designs. Yes. Like, it's a little bit understated for me. And if you can see what I'm wearing, you can probably understand.
I will just jump in on the disparity between Cairns and Sydney. So the good of it is that it seems there's only been maybe 2 to 4 players. I've heard rumours that up in Cairns it's 1 to 3. In Sydney, there's only been 1 objection. That's 4 players across the league of a talent pool of how many? 100 plus? So that's a small percentage. So it's a good thing. Secondly, that press release they put out, it reminded me of that episode of The Office when Michael's something, I think on one of the pieces of paper is an offensive watermark, so he calls in the press, and as a result, just explodes the whole issue. That press conference was so, I hated to read it. It was embarrassing for them, and to sign off with time to hoop, I think it was exclamation mark, it angered me, it bothered me for a bunch of different reasons, and it just was so totally unnecessary. That's the last thing I've got.
I had just a couple of things quickly. So obviously, yeah, massive shout out obviously to the Wildcats as an organisation. What they did around the arena on Friday night was so far above first class, it was ridiculous. You know, getting that amazing sort of rainbow view and the photos that we all probably saw on Twitter. Obviously, a lot of you were probably at the game as well.
Mastodon.
Okay. I'm a bit older, so I don't know. It was on MySpace. Anyway, but the other thing I was actually a little bit surprised at was, so as we follow the cricket as well, Nathan and I do a lot of that. Watching the Scorchers and seeing AJ Tye all season wearing the rainbow sweatbands, I was actually surprised to see nobody wearing something like that, just as a, you know, just as a little something, basically. I don't know. I don't know if that's maybe gone a bit too far, but I just thought something like that would have been a really simple piece to put in there.
Mm, yeah, that's a good point.
We want to talk about the other rounds quickly as well. So Heritage Round and Indigenous Round, I think there's no denial that these are really great things too. It was really weird to see the Brisbane Illawarra game with Brisbane wearing red and white and Illawarra wearing yellow and blue.
Yeah.
Someone did tell me online though, like, I'm a bit young. They did wear red once upon a time, and he enjoyed seeing that. But I think we enjoy that these rounds are a good thing, and they should be here to stay.
What worries me with their Heritage Round is the last few years of jersey design across the league has been pretty ordinary. What are they going to do in Heritage Round in 10 years' time? And they look back and it's like all these really same jerseys. They're gonna run out of heritage if they don't start making uniforms more interesting.
You know, what they'll do, the uniforms going forward are going to be so bad that they'll look back at these ones and say, this is fantastic.
I mean, you are the uniform designer, so bow to your knowledge.
Well, all right, I mean, I'm going to throw the question out there. Who do we think won Heritage Round in terms of the jerseys? Does anyone have any thoughts on...
I think Tasmania.
Tassie? Yeah, yeah. Is that the obvious choice because they went back to the Devils sort of setup?
Because they actually made a jersey that looked like an old jersey.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all it takes.
Adelaide was pretty good.
Adelaide was
awesome. That late 90s with the star and the three-cut. Yeah, I like that one.
I like the Perth. I like the Perth one, except I don't understand why it had Perth on the front.
Instead of Wildcats. And not have it below the number.
Yeah. So close.
They could have done that and it would have been really good.
I suppose the flip side as well, though, is if you look at teams like South East Melbourne and United, why wouldn't they go back to like the old Tigers or the South East Melbourne Magic sort of days rather than like the Phoenix basically stole what the Phoenix Suns did with their City Edition jerseys where they had that skyline?
Yep.
I don't know. Am I the only one that found that a bit
United, I can understand because obviously there's a few teams, but South East Melbourne, I don't know why you wouldn't go with the Magic. That just seems far too obvious. Far too easy. Yeah,
I don't know. I don't get it. But it seemed like for the Melbourne teams, it was like a City Round. Everyone else's heritage. So
it's just Looney Tunes, so we've got a different body really. Well, it does get to that point. Joe, thoughts on the rounds other than the Pride Round?
No, I thought the jerseys were good. Like what you said, I've got nothing to add. I can't come over the top. What you said was great.
I've got a question around Indigenous Round. So, I don't get to nearly as many games as I would like to. And this is a full, you know, I don't know the answer to this question. Do they have Indigenous entertainment at the games?
Yes, yeah.
They do? Okay, cool. That's right.
So they have a welcome to country.
In terms of a smoking
ceremony as well.
But in terms of like the halftime entertainment, are they bringing in, you know, Indigenous
rappers,
dancers,
they
are? Cool.
Yeah. Well, they make an effort too. That's as they should.
Cool.
They're
the best jerseys of the year. They should be in those jerseys.
They are good. I would be well in favour of an Indigenous element on every jersey. I think that would be a really nice touch. Absolutely. We kind of touched on the awards. Now, I can't remember if you lads talked about it on your last episode or not, because it's been a few weeks since then. Did you guys talk about the Next Generation Award?
Just low-key slam right there.
No, I did listen. Schedule. I just have a really poor memory. That's what.
Sorry, I've been a little busy, man.
Yeah, no, I did listen. It's been a few weeks.
We did a pump and dump, basically, didn't we, Joe?
That's right.
Yeah? Come on, who doesn't like it with a pump and dump? Come on. Joe, they're not buying it, man.
You throw seeds out there, some take root. No, the Generation Award we didn't talk about. This is the 25-year-old and under award. I'm excited to hear what you guys have to think about this, whether it's good or bad.
So the Next Generation Award's kind of replacing the Rookie of the Year. They've set it at an age limit of 25. Well, I mean, Stu and I think that's too old. Yeah. Harry Froling came out and said that he'd still qualify in season 7 for that. Show of hands, who thinks 25 is too old for the Next Generation? Yeah, pretty much unanimous.
My hands down.
Oh,
okay, go on.
25, it just means that the imports are more involved and I've got this written down here. I'm going to read it. Any award criteria that's holding up Ruben Tarangi and Harry Froehlich as a display of excellence, I'm all for changing that criteria. Brutal as that may sound.
Should it be more a games-based, though, like in terms of, we've spoken about this before, should it be, you know, under 50, under 100, whatever, games, rather than necessarily an age thing?
Yeah, because you look at Tom Jervis, right? Tom Jervis came in at 27 or something in his first season, so.
John Mooney should have been qualified too.
Yep. Yeah. He's the obvious one that jumps out. Yeah.
I like the age thing. I mean, this is a league without a draft. I like how the criteria are shifting from, you know, you have to be a local player and the contract and all sort of weird stuff to just under 25, bang, if you produce, you get it good. And I actually really like it.
Well, Wardenberg would have been a shoo-in for this year, but now he's out of the picture almost
He's still in the picture.
It's interesting.
Rolling in his 12.
Because they've said you have to be basically 25, or, well, you have to be under 25 on the 30th of April, and that there's a big name, Will McDowell-White, actually turns 25 on the 13th of April, so he's one that probably would have been right up there, probably misses out. It's probably between Wardenberg, Travers, Manick, and probably Sam Froehlich. They're probably the four main ones. And does anyone else have any other names?
I think Wardenberg and Froehlich, but I think Wardenberg's been playing well enough to possibly win it in his own right anyway. I thought he was really good yesterday. I thought he did some really good things, particularly the second half of the season. He's just improving. He's got typical young player trajectory. I think everything's trending in the right direction for him. But I'd actually be in favour of a Rookie of the Year award for a first-year player and a Next Generation award. Rookie of the Year award, obviously you can only win it once. Next Generation, hey, if you dominate that category for 4 years, you could win it 4 years in a row, potentially. I think that's how I would like to see the league do it. But my biggest problem with this is decisions on the fly. Don't make this decision with three rounds to go. Why? Like, I hate this moving goalpost stuff. It's partly why I hate the Elam ending. Sorry to bring it up. Like, I hate moving goalposts. If our system is time, then we'll use time to the end of the game. Do you know what I mean? If our system, like, is...
Stick to that, not that you're...
Yeah. fair enough. Quick straw poll. We'll talk about awards maybe a little bit after as well. But quick straw poll on the MVP. Who has Xavier Cooks as their MVP this season?
No.
No? All right. Who has Mitch Creek as their MVP this season?
No hands.
No hands. We've got one for Mitch Creek.
Ross and Mitch are a gift.
Okay.
I reckon I've got Mitch at the moment. Who's got Bryce?
Yeah.
All right, we're clearly in a room. Yeah. It didn't go up. Is anyone else in the mix? Or people are just shy?
Keanu?
Has he played enough games?
I mean, Jalen Adams missed a quarter of the season last year.
I have a very interesting stat on Keanu Pinder, though. He's missed seven games this season. Have a guess what Cairns' record is in those seven games. 7-0.
6-1?
7-0. So it's like, I don't know, does that maybe disqualify him as being the most valuable player when this team wins?
Makes him more valuable.
How? Valuable for losing.
It's an interesting one. He's been in the running, obviously, all season. He's had a monster season. Definitely most improved player for me.
Is he the best player on that team?
Is he? Well, and that's a good question. You've got DJ Hogue. You've got Machado. Well, not Machado, sorry. Jesus Christ.
Scott. I would put McCall ahead.
Yeah. Are there any other names anyone's got out there besides what we've listed?
Brown Jr.
Yeah, Brown.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, he's been bloody good for that team.
The thing that frustrates me about the MVP award is that the NBL appointed media have quickly, they decided a narrative pretty early on that it was going to be about Xavier Cooks and maybe Mitch Creek. And there's such a taking Bryce Cotton for granted. It's kind of like what happened to Michael Jordan, you know, when Karl Malone won the MVP in the NBA.
Barkley as well.
Yep. It's just people get accustomed to it, and it's easy to start taking that for granted, but you still look at it and you're like, without Bryce Cotton in this Wildcats team, like, they would be absolutely terrible.
They wanted to come from a top two team, it seems.
Yeah, and it's just that they like the narrative of the two Australian guys, this is my opinion, two Australian guys gunning for the same position, sort of in that boomers mix, NBA potential for the both of them. Mm, that's the storyline.
Yeah.
And so they're just pushing that, and I think it's unfair to Bryce Cotton.
Seems this year they had it decided at round 10 who was going to be in the top two or three. Again.
Even before the season started, I remember
from day one.
Yeah, they were, like, Santa Maria especially was talking up Cooks.
from the very beginning, before a ball had been bounced.
Yes. Oh, that's
well, that's a good question. Show of hands who likes current players commentating.
No.
Yeah, no, so there's no one. Does that depend who it is?
Rayton May's put in a good.
Yeah,
yeah,
he was good.
I think XRM's the best out of them.
That's RXM, isn't it?
Yeah. MXR. MX5.
Yeah, I thought Alan Williams was awesome. I thought he did a really good job the one or two games that he did as well. Mitch, I'm a bit on the fence about Mitch Craig. I don't know about him.
Joe, thoughts on awards?
Thoughts on awards. I just want to make the quick case for Cotton. Andrew did it very well. I just want to add, first in points per game, fourth in PER, actually behind some of the other guys in the conversation, sixth in assists. I'll just say this. The case against Cooks for me is his value. I looked it up in the dictionary. Worth or usefulness. And to me, Cooks has got Walton and DJ, who both of those guys have won games on their own back. DJ most recently, Walton in the past. Those two are light years ahead of the second and third best player surrounding Bryce Cotton. So for me, it's tough. It's definitely between Cooks and Cotton, but for me, it's got to be Cotton. And also, Perth have only lost, what, four games less than Sydney. I know Sydney are at the top and it's very glitzy, but we'll see where it finishes. But to me, there's that.
Here's the other thing to think about. If they keep pushing the Cooks narrative, make him get, you know, better on a sort of national and international stage, could be the next guy that picks up an NBA contract. What's good for the NBL, doesn't it?
That's true.
An Aussie guy goes there.
Yep.
If he was sitting by somewhere, I don't know why he didn't go over there and went to New Zealand.
It's a good point, though. There are agendas, and obviously we've got the next star, we've got the NBL, ex-NBA, and there's always that NBA element, isn't there, looming over. So,
just quickly as well, one last thing with the whole Cotton thing. I don't know what everyone's thoughts are with plus-minus, but the only player with a higher plus-minus per 40 minutes in the league is Chris Golding. So he's doing good things. He's playing big minutes.
So you're saying Golding for MVP?
I mean, no, but it's just like his value on the court. Obviously, when he's off the court, we've seen how much the team has struggled. The offense looks even more discombobulated. It's just not coming from anywhere. So,
thanks for listening to part one of NBL Podcasts Live. To listen to part two, please check out the Sport Blokes podcast, available on all your reputable podcast players and some unreputable ones too. There's even a special guest.